Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, screaming into your internet echo chamber one painful episode at a time. My name's Jimmy and I voted to leave the EU in 2016.
Hi, my name's Jazza and everything's happening. Help, I voted to remain. Hi.
Do you want to explain in more detail what is actually happening just after, just before we recorded this podcast, I should say?
Yeah, are we going to call this an emergency podcast?
It seems like everyone's doing them, so we might as
okay,
well,
cool.
I think.
All right, excellent. Well, love clickbait. So basically, Theresa May had a 12-hour meeting with, she's the Prime Minister, by the way, had a 12-hour meeting with all of her mates at her like summer home in Chequers. Very nice building, very beautiful. And they ended up coming to a conclusion of what Brexit actually means. How exciting. She came up with what is essentially what people have been calling like a softer version of Brexit. So that essentially means that we're still going to be quite tied to the European Union going forward. And after that, some of the biggest names on the Brexit side of the cabinet, they are David Davis, who was the Brexit secretary, who apparently didn't really do very much, and then Boris Johnson, the foreign secretary, who has managed to go around and offend everyone. They've both decided to resign in the last like 24 hours. We're recording this on Monday evening. David Davis resigned on midnight yesterday, or like early this morning, and then Boris Johnson resigned mid-afternoon on Monday. And also, I'm sure you're all chomping at the bit to know this, Chris Green also resigned. He's a person.
That's harsh.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what's happened, Jimmy. People are kind of freaking out because the hardcore Brexiters, like the zealots, they are like they taste blood, or they can smell some blood, and they feel like they can get Theresa May out so that they can actually deliver like basically a no deal Brexit, because that's what they want. They just want completely out of the European Union, and all of the Ramonas, hello, me too, are kind of silently quite optimistic. I think that optimism has been buoyed by the fact that England are doing reasonably well in the World Cup at the moment, and we think that this is probably an opportunity to get to trigger a leadership election that would then probably trigger a general election or a second referendum, and then people want to get the Tories out, I think. What do you think? Was that, how was that assessment, Jimmy?
Yeah, I think that's broadly true. As you say, there's people on the kind of hard Brexit side, at least parliamentarians on the hard Brexit side, do seem to be suggesting that they might mount some sort of leadership challenge to Theresa May, which in turn might help them facilitate a harder Brexit, either in the form of a no-deal Brexit or just harder terms, more terms of the deal separating the UK from the EU in legal terms.
So basically, in order to do that, they need to get 48 signatures, 48 MPs that are going to trigger a vote of no confidence in Theresa May. They haven't got that yet. There were apparently whispers that this was going to happen this evening, on Monday evening, but we haven't actually seen that happen yet. I was initially... So I made a prediction, Jimmy, and you know how well my predictions go. Actually, surprisingly well, actually. And I suggested that this was going to be the beginning of the end for Theresa May. I still think it is, but I think it might take a little bit longer than people initially thought.
Surely the beginning of the end for Theresa May was the general election last year.
Well, yes, sure.
This might be the
beginning of the end, whenever you want.
This might be the beginning of the actual end.
Yes.
But the thing is, the reason I'm sceptical is that the fundamental facts keeping Theresa May in place, which don't really have anything to do, I think, with cabinet resignations, is the parliamentary, mainly the parliamentary arithmetic. I don't think it would be a good idea for anyone who is opposed to Theresa May in the Tory party to pursue a general election, because that could go anyway. It could end up with Jeremy Corbyn in office. It could end up returning roughly the same vote, which would then make the Tories look quite stupid. And you'd expend all the energy on a general election at a time where Britain really needs to be finalising its deal with the EU for Brexit. This is obviously a crisis for Theresa May, but she's actually weathered quite a few crises in the past, and I don't necessarily think this one's terminal.
She's made of titanium, like Sia.
Yeah, something like that.
I want to know what you think, because Jimmy, you're very bad at giving your opinions on things on this podcast. We all know that, and everybody knows what I think about this whole thing. As the representative of the 52%, how did you feel about Theresa May's suggestion, and what do you think is the best way forward for the type of Brexit that you as an individual human person want?
So when I voted to leave, and when it transpired that 52% of those who actually participated in the referendum did likewise, I wanted a genuine political independence of the UK from the EU. So that does mean freedom to set our own laws. It means sort of tariff freedom, control of migration. I'm personally not that bothered by the levels of migration we have, but it's clear that it is something that does bother a lot of people, and I think it's reasonable for a country to control it. And I essentially wanted the UK to become a genuinely independent political entity. Obviously, in the current models of government that are in the world, no country, probably not even the US, is actually absolutely independent. There's always forms of cooperation and treaties and whatnot, but I felt that the way the EU had been constructed had made it democratically unaccountable, and thus I was opposed to our relationship in it at the time.
What did you feel about Theresa May's deal?
Well, the reason I gave that pricey is that as time has gone on, it's kind of become obvious to me, at least, that leaving the EU should never have been seen as a 2-year project. It should have been seen as a 10-year project, and perhaps even longer than that. In terms of getting out of all the various mechanisms that make up the EU and all the forms of cooperation and re-establishing that on a new footing, it clearly was going to take a lot longer than the 2-year deal-making period envisioned by Article 50. And I know that there were almost no Brexit supporting politicians who were in a position to actually take charge of the British government after the vote, with the exception of Boris Johnson, really. So it has been left at the end of the day to Theresa May, who voted Remain, albeit in a very soft, quiet way. But I feel that she has kind of failed to carry this out. And I don't want to make it sound as though I'm putting the blame on her, and that there were no problems with Brexit. Clearly, Brexit, to be actually implemented in any way, was going to be very, very complicated, and she obviously had other factors that were weighing against her in terms of internal Tory party politics. But I still think none of this, even though it has gone phenomenally badly, that has actually made me reconsider my vote. Well, it's not made me change my vote, it has made me reconsider it.
Oh, don't you dare tempt... Oh, that sounds very exciting, Jimmy. Don't you dare... Don't you dangle that in front of me, you little tease.
You'd have to be very unreflective to have observed the Brexit process. As a Leave voter, obviously, as a Remain voter, in some ways it's been a fantastic 2 years because so much has gone wrong. At least from a sort of intellectual smugness point of view. From a political point of view, it's very bad from your view.
I'll take that.
As a Leave voter, you would have to be very unreflective not to have watched what has been happening and not thought maybe this wasn't such a good idea.
So, are the people who are kind of backing this deal that Theresa May has put forward, or the suggestion that she's put forward, the people who are backing this are basically, well, Andrew Marr was actually really, really harsh about it on Sunday, the BBC journalist. He had Gove on the sofa with him, and he was saying that this was kind of like an attack on British sovereignty because it takes away all of the decision-making apparatus that the UK has as a member of the European Union, and means that we actually have to still adhere to all of the rules that end up being making. The catchphrase that people use is that we end up becoming a deal taker rather than a deal maker. So, do you back kind of like this attempt by David Davis and Boris Johnson to kind of disrupt the ship and try and get a harder Brexit?
No, I think at this point, if you're in favour of hard Brexit, which I suppose to some degree I am, I think what you actually have to accept is because of the way that the negotiations have taken place, in the short term, you're probably going to have to accept a soft Brexit and then find a way forward from there, just because of the time involved. I think at this stage, whatever your position is on Brexit, I think the only responsible thing for a British politician to do, if they're in a position of authority to do so, is actually to get to some sort of deal that doesn't leave. Because I think the, from what I've read at least, the no deal scenario sounds terrible.
Yeah, no, it sounds appalling. Basically, well, like we're not even sure if planes are going to be able to land is like the classic example that people, and that's genuinely not, apparently that's not a melodramatic thing to say.
Well, it's obviously this is a very because of the way people feel about this issue, you know, it, probably a lot of the hyperbolic warnings from either side are untrue, or at least are a bit exaggerated. But yeah, at this point, you've got to think that some deal is probably going to be better than no deal, just based on even a superficial reading of the of, you know, newspapers and that sort of thing. And because of the time constraints, the only sensible solution is to push towards some sort of Brexit involving a deal, which at this stage would be a soft Brexit, I think, because of the UK's negotiating position, among other things. And then with that, if you're a hard Brexiteer, accept the risk that those arrangements might become somewhat permanent, or at least medium to long term. Because, you know, I mean, people, you know, lay a lot of the blame for all this at David Cameron's feet, and it is absolutely true that he
Oh,
made
it is 100% David Cameron's
no
fault.
contingency planning. Well, Brexit in general is not David Cameron's fault. The lack of contingency planning is absolutely David Cameron's fault.
I've seen a lot of people, myself included, taking and relishing the tweet that he sent out just before the 2015 election, saying that you could have chaos under Ed Miliband, or basically an earlier version of strong and stable under David Cameron, which might somehow well, no, the irony is delicious.
The thing is, though, Ed Miliband has, who was the former Labour Party leader,
Now has a great podcast.
now has an okay podcast. I don't think it's that great.
The first couple of episodes were fine. I haven't listened to any of the others.
I listened to a recent one and wasn't that impressed. But
Oh, shots fired.
he, you know, said on the record that he didn't think the British public should be given a vote on EU membership, which I think, on a very fundamental level, is probably morally wrong.
Yeah,
Well, it
even the Lib Dems had a commitment to have a vote on EU membership when there was a change in kind of like the current status as a member state, right?
yeah. I mean, I still think that's the Nick Clegg position. I still think that's somewhat dishonest, that, you know, enough treaty changes have been made without being ratified in a meaningful sense by British citizens, that it probably was time for a referendum, but hanging it on a new treaty wasn't like the dumbest way of doing it. But, you know, so Ed Miliband gets elected in the 2015 general election and decides not to call a vote. I actually think in many ways you probably just push the problems back a little bit further. I don't think you actually solve the fundamental you know, sense of alienation that a lot of British people have in respect to the EU. So I don't know that Ed Miliband wouldn't have called a referendum, but I don't know that he would have solved the problems long term.
No, but I don't like that completely depends how you see the solving of the problem. surely. So, like, it, essentially, you would end up with 5 years, because we had a fixed term parliament act, 5 years of Labour government, and the circumstances and the political climate is going to be very, very different in 2020. I keep forgetting how recently 2015 was, and actually how much has changed since 2015. It feels like I've aged about 50 years. But you end up having, like, one of the big we had came off the back of that horrific summer with huge numbers of with the migration crisis in the Mediterranean. Resentment around immigration was at like an all-time high. Lots of the old people with who voted for Brexit, who ended up voting for Brexit in 2016, were I mean, still alive. A lot of them would have been dead by 2020. I don't know. I feel like these are fair points. Like the demographic trend is towards in the UK, which is interesting. Across the rest of the European Union, that isn't necessarily mimicked.
You're thinking of France, which has a lot of young people voting for the Front National, and also people voting for anti-EU parties in Italy, right?
Yeah, exactly. And even like across, especially in the Mediterranean, like Greece as well is a really big example of that. But the trend in the UK is, as you become younger, you become much more pro-European. And I think that the kicking of the can down the road at least 5 years would have probably, I mean, cemented our role as kind of like a member of the European Union, frankly.
Cemented is definitely putting it too strongly.
Or ossified, crystallized, made firmer.
I don't know, because I imagine Tony Blair, when he was considering holding a referendum on adoption of the euro, which during the late 90s, which in the end he didn't do because he didn't think he wasn't sure enough that he could win it. You know, he probably would have thought the same thing. Like, you know, young people, I haven't looked at the statistics there, but I'd be willing to bet that young people were still more pro-EU than older people, at least proportionally. Mm-hmm. And he probably would have thought, you know, in 10, 20 years' time, people will probably be much more in favour of the idea of Britain joining the euro. Obviously didn't foresee various crises around the euro that occurred. But I think it a lot of the time when people look at sort of historical trends, they look at the sort of growth within the last 5 years of a particular like number, and then they just extrapolate from that. And I think that's kind of a naive way of thinking about it, because you don't know how the political situation is going to change. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, put it this way, like, support for the EU among the British public in the 75 referendum was like...
Yeah, it was
high,
I mean, it wasn't
right?
Even the EU, it's the European Economic Area.
Yes, it was. But, like, throughout history, there's various points where you could look at support for the EU or its predecessor organisations and say, oh, look, the EU's becoming more and more popular in 10 years' time, it'll be this popular. And quite a lot of the time, you'd have been wrong. I mean, equally, you know, in times where... The EU has been less popular in the UK, you could go the other way and say, oh, it's obviously on popularity is on decline, and then it changes. So the whole young people argument does seem to me to be kind of false, even on its face.
If you don't think that they're going to be able to actually get rid of Theresa May, why is it that they actually resigned then, Jimmy? Like, as the Brexit whisperer, can you look into the minds of David Davis and Boris Johnson and let us know what's going on between those lovely little ears of theirs?
I'm not sure you'd want to look into Boris Johnson's mind. I think the reasons are slightly different. David Davis, I think, has been a Brexiter since before it was cool, as it were. He's a guy who, even if you disagree with his positions on things, I think they're genuinely held. Before he actually became Brexit Secretary, he actually pursued, I think it was a privacy case in the High Court. But he's actually, he kind of has a loose libertarian bent. And I think... in the case of Brexit, he did have a genuine view on how things should go, and part of the reason he's been ineffective as Brexit Secretary is that he didn't fully buy into Theresa May's ideas for how Brexit should be done.
Right. Yeah.
And after checkers, he just decided enough was enough. in the case of Boris Johnson, I think over the course of the weekend, I'm not sure if he would have actually ended up deciding that he was going to resign this week, but after David Davis resigned, I think he probably felt that he had to, because otherwise his position would look a little bit odd. It would be like, well, David Davis resigned.
What about the other Brexiters in the cabinet, though? Like, I'm thinking specifically of Gove. I will say, I think that Gove is—he's the current—he's the current
environment
secretary.
Yeah.
And I have a friend who's in the Conservative Party, and he actually tips somebody like Gove, or tips Gove specifically as like a possible next leader, just because he's seen as very competent. Even though not many people seem to be pulling the possibility of him running again, which is interesting.
I think there's a general feeling within the Tory party that he behaved so dishonourably in the last leadership election, obviously stabbing Boris Johnson in the back, as it were, at the last minute, that he would find it difficult to gain support, at least among MPs, I think. There's a lot of people, I think, in the Tory party who like what Michael Gove stands for, but wouldn't be willing to back him a bit because of his personal conduct in the referendum campaign and the fallout.
So there was a load of talks this afternoon about the possibility of them getting the 48 of the, how many is it? 48, 43?
48 letters.
Yeah, 48. Well, yes. Letters, signatures from the parliament. Yeah. So Robert Peston.
So we actually should explain a little bit what that entails.
Oh yeah, no, go on. That is like a jargony thing that we know that normal people don't.
So in the Tory election system for the leader of the Tory party, there's this thing called the 1922 committee of backbenchers. And because of the way the rules are set out, in order for a leadership contest to take place, assuming that the leader themselves haven't resigned, as was obviously the case with David Cameron, you need 48 MPs, which equates to 15% of the sort of the Tory MPs in Parliament at the current time, to send a letter asking for a motion of no confidence in the current leader of the Tory party, so in this case Theresa May. And then if 48 of those letters or 48 signatures on any number of letters gets put to the chair of the 1922 committee, an election of the Tory leader has to take place, although I think the Tory leader can actually the current leader can actually stand in that contest.
Yes, I believe so. Yeah.
So is it a motion of no confidence that takes place and then a leadership? Yeah, sorry. So yeah, firstly there's a confidence vote, and then if the current leader gets a majority of votes, they can stay. If they get a minority of votes, they have to go, and they can't then stand in the subsequent leadership election. That's how it works.
Yeah, got it.
So anyway, you were saying something about Robert Peston.
Yeah, so Robert Peston has suggested that there were whispers this afternoon about the possibility of that letter or those letters and signatures being delivered by the end of day today, as I was saying earlier. But that hasn't transpired yet. Robert Peston has suggested that it's just because they don't have a viable person to run against her, because they don't have a viable replacement. And I think in another universe, or in slightly different circumstances, Gove would be the person to do that. And I think he's doing some weird political manoeuvring at the moment. You suggested that he might be the new foreign secretary to replace Boris Johnson. Some other people are saying
some people have been suggesting that. I don't, you know, I only know what I've been reading on Twitter. You know,
yeah, I know. Like we don't have, like I just know some Tories and ask them. That's all I do. That's my insider knowledge.
Yeah, that comes back to my thinking on why in some ways this isn't as big a crisis for Theresa May, because fundamentally there's nobody who really wants to replace her. I mean, there's people that want to be Tory leader in general, but I don't think there's... Not right now, exactly, yeah. It just seems like... It's a terrible time to be taking over anyway, because, you know, Brexit is a difficult thing to deliver, but particularly so close to the various deadlines that are coming up in relation to the leaving process. So I mean, I don't want to make the prediction that she's definitely going to make it to the end of the year, but right now, he says on a Monday evening, hoping that a no confidence vote won't be started tomorrow. Right now,
or even later tonight, right?
I think. Well, yeah, I suppose it could.
It probably won't, but it is possible. Yeah, weird stuff has happened.
Yeah.
Speaking of weird stuff happening, Nigel Farage has said that. If he's not happy with how the UK is leaving the EU in March 2019, then he might come back and lead UKIP. So that'll be fun.
How serious do you think that threat is?
I don't know. He did do it while tweeting out a photo of him with a taupe shark that he'd just caught in Barbados. A taupe shark, if you don't know, is an endangered species. So Nigel Farage is officially a cunt.
You needed the shark to prove that point to you.
I did, yeah. No, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. I actually thought we'd be able to have... No, I've never... No, he's a dick. What did you think of... Have you seen Theresa May's response to Boris Johnson?
Yeah, so Theresa May and her letter. I wonder if I can actually pull it up. Possibly not.
I'm actually quite enjoying, like, the sass.
Yeah, so have you got it in front of you? She said she was surprised by his resignation.
Yeah,
Is the
disappointed
quote.
And surprised.
Yeah, sounds like a teacher chastising an errant pupil.
But that is totally the vibe that Theresa May has at her best.
Yeah,
stern teacher.
Very much so. Yeah. In some ways, I think she's well shot of him. I think it was a bit of a mistake appointing him as foreign secretary. Easy to say in hindsight, but even at the time I was a bit perplexed by the decision. Are there any things that we haven't touched on yet that you want to touch on?
No.
Hang on. On Twitter, at least, you said that you thought there was probably going to be a leadership contest in some form.
Oh yes, I made one of those famous predictions that always end up being right.
Yeah. So what is your reasoning behind that? Is it just gut instinct again?
Well, basically, for anybody who is relatively new to the podcast, I'm basically the human version of that clairvoyant octopus in the World Cup in 2010 that predicted all of Germany's game wins, and I have been able to predict every UK election or referendum since 2013.
Have you called them all correctly? I know you've called some of them correctly.
Yeah, I have called them all correctly, yeah.
Even 2017, did you call, like, Tory minority government? Was that your prediction?
Yeah, do you not remember?
I don't keep tabs on your predictions.
I have milked that for as much as it's worth, Jimmy.
I should say that, like, even though you do, you have called them correctly, quote unquote, the degree of certainty that you've expressed on, say, Trump getting elected was just wrong, bearing in mind what we knew at the time. There was a chance he was going to get elected.
Yeah, sure, but, like, that's not how clairvoyance works, Jimmy.
Right, okay. So, well, are you sure this time that there will be a leadership election off the current political crisis?
I think so. What I predicted was this is the beginning of the end of May, and she is going to be ousted. There's going to be a new leader before the end of the year, and then we'll have another general election or a referendum on the Brexit deal before the end of the year.
Oh,
that's what I'm calling.
Okay, that's a very specific prediction, so we can at least test if you're right or wrong.
Hey, so was me calling a Tory minority government in 2017.
That is a very specific prediction. I've got to give you that. Mm-hmm. I suppose, you know, might as well counter that by saying I think May will survive this one. I think she'll still be in power on January 1st of next year. I'm not sure about that. I'd probably pull a figure out my arse. I'd say I'm 70-80% confident that that's the case.
Great. I love that pointless percentage that you've placed on your confidence, Jimmy.
Well, you know, it tells you something, at least. That's it. It's a mathematical measure of how I feel on a subjective level, which isn't that useful.
Brilliant. That's so cute.
But, you know,
we should
pretend that predictions are useful here. You know,
we should.
Crapshoots.
Just as we as we close this off, Jeremy Hunt has just been named the new foreign secretary.
Jeremy Hunt.
Jeremy fucking Hunt. You remember the guy who screwed up the Olympics and the army had to come in? Do you remember the guy who has been in charge of all of the cuts to the NHS and who's driving the thing into the ground? Yeah, that guy. He's now the foreign secretary.
Are you seeing this on Twitter? I'm not seeing
this. I just got the alert from BBC.
Fair enough. Well, there you are. I think that's an appropriate point to wrap things up.
Fuck my life. Okay, happy Brexit, everyone. At least you can forget everything by watching either the football or reruns of Great British Bake Off.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Just a quick note at the end of this podcast that if you want to support us financially, you can go to patreon.com/rightdishonourable and sign up there. We also have an Audible link set up. You can go to audible.com or audible.co.uk/rightdishonourable and sign up there, and we get a portion of the proceeds from you subscribing to the audiobook service. As per usual, we'd like to thank Ollie McGregor, Agatha Hoder, Gemma Cumming, Matt, John O, and Emerson Spartz for supporting the podcast through Patreon. Thank you very much.